Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Today marks the beginning, September 1st, of a period when we start to look at our health care if we're employer or employee, or even if we buy it on our own. And one of the real, I don't want to say pioneers, one of the more innovative thinkers in the industry is Paul Ketchel. He is the founder and CEO of MD Saver, and he believes healthcare will be completely e-commerce based in 5 years. And we welcome him now to the program. Paul, glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Paul, tell us a little bit about yourself, your company, and your website before we do anything else.
Yeah, so I had started my career right out of college in health policy. I worked for former Senator Bill Frist in Washington, D.C., and later went on to be a federal healthcare lobbyist working on a variety of issues on healthcare payments and pharmaceuticals and things of that nature, and then began, really becoming a healthcare entrepreneur, and have had, a few different healthcare startups, and MD Saves are the third one I've had the fortunate, time to be a part of. And MD Save was really a company that came out initially of the Health Care Reform Act, and, we saw the act and the changes to the benefit designs and the mandated coverage requirements. We believed strongly at the company that you would see an increase in premiums that would be pretty significant. And as a result, to counteract those premium increases and access health care, most people would choose a high deductible health plan to have a lower premium payment but a higher out-of-pocket expense. And so MD Save was a company we really wanted to build, and a website that was created to allow patients to shop, compare, and purchase healthcare services at a rate they couldn't access using insurance or on their own. And so today, we have about 8,000 bundled healthcare procedures across 33 states and 180 markets, and it allows patients to shop, compare, and purchase. And our savings is about 40 to 60% better rates than those patients could access with either their insurance-based contract or if they were not insured or individual on their own. And so it really is just a lot like Amazon.com or Expedia, where you can put in a service in your location and you'll see the different providers, the full service up front, and you can make a informed decision. And the price you see is truly the price you get. There's no additional bills. And so it's really just using e-commerce technologies to innovate an industry that is, in my opinion, well overdue for innovation, and allowing people to shop and purchase for their health care the same way they've now become accustomed to shopping and purchasing for other major expenditures in their life.
Well, that was a mouthful. Can you spell out your website for our audience?
It's mdsave.com. MDSAVE.com.
Okay. I'm going to ask one question and then turn it over to Dan, because he's chomping at the at the mouth to talk about this subject. But I guess my question is, whether the figure is 83% or 85%, most Americans don't spend up to their limit on their deductible. And usually it goes up as we age. Having said that, and having been an advocate of HSAs for years, why do you think e-commerce will play such an important role in coming years?
Well, today, if you look at the deductible, as you mentioned, typically, if you take out maternity coverage and you take out Medicare age, the average American has an inpatient event about once every 6 months. And when you look at the deductible limits being $3,000 to $5,000, the only way an individual typically is going to hit that in a year is if they have a very expensive medication and they know that going in, or you have an inpatient event. And so most of the time, you know, that premium section of the of your policy really goes unused by the patient each year. You're just paying for pre-consumption. E-commerce is going to be important because now that the Americans are really responsible for that other 16 years of health care out of pocket, and it's their own money, they're really concerned on how much that's going to be. And when you look at e-commerce, we're able to give those rates to patients, but at the same time, our providers are netting 10 to 15% more on a transaction than they were getting on a traditional claim. And the reason for that is we're removing the claims processor, the billing company, the debt collector, the early out company, the 7 or 8 intermediaries that sit in the middle of every healthcare transaction currently. And that's what you're doing with e-commerce, is you're connecting a buyer and a seller. So it's really just efficiencies in the marketplace, which is improving the provider's experience and improving the patient experience. And so when you look at that and you look at the size of this out-of-pocket economy, I don't believe there's any question that large e-commerce players like Amazon or Google or eBay or, you know, other people who have those arguments, they're going to enter this market in the coming years because it's just too big to ignore.
Dan, over to you.
Thank you so much. Paul, what you said in your answer to Don's question, basically, I believe, proves Donald Trump's point that if you deregulate healthcare so that it can be sold across state lines, it doesn't say how, you can lower the cost. And you obviously have demonstrated that. And I suspect as your program gets larger and larger and more organizations turn to the buying service you offer, you probably are going to be able to increase the savings.
Yeah, I would think that's right. I mean, in the first years, we really saw savings across our markets in the 25 to 30 percentile range. And today now we're seeing really savings averaging closer to 50 to 60% in those ranges. And that's just over the last 3 years. And so you're starting to really, you know, as our technology evolves and we get more efficient in how those are processed and you have larger economies of scale, I think you can definitely increase savings and efficiencies to bring that cost down even further.
Can you imagine, Paul, that if you had been around in 2009 and 2010, when the Democrats were trying to shove Obamacare down the throat of the American people, if you would have had an alternative and you would have had the exchange as opposed to the god-awful mess that they created, we would be much better off. We would have better quality of health care, more people would be covered, and our costs would have been dramatically cut. I just think it's a shame that it's a shame, but it's also not surprising, Paul, that the Democrats and the Republicans in Washington can't get out of their own way and think about alternatives in a whole new way. And I think that what you're doing is a significant solution to this incredibly rising cost. I suspect that in a few months, when we get the premium increases for Obamacare, they're going to be phenomenal because we're going to have less and less providers, and some areas are not going to have any providers at all. And then by the time we get around to the 2018 midterm, if the Congress hasn't done something about it, they're going to see more increases. And I got to believe the Democrats who passed this legislation and the Republicans who didn't vote for it, the Democrats own a huge, huge problem. And they may further erode their presence in the Congress because I think the people are already fed up with it. But the idea that you can't get to your deductible, it's just like kicking a field goal. just before you kick it, they move the goalpost back. It's insane. The other thing that's interesting, and I want your opinion on this, Paul, is that one of the things that has happened as a result of Obamacare, at least of the Northeast where I'm from, is that a lot of doctors who had their own small practices are selling their practices to the hospitals because the administrative cost to comply with Obamacare has forced them to add one or two more people to their office staff in order to be able to handle the paperwork. And they're saying, I'm basically becoming not a doctor, I'm a paperwork pusher, and I've got staff that does nothing but that. So they give up. They sell their practices, and they become 9-to-5 doctors. And there are many cases where we have, especially in the rural areas, there are no doctors at all. So your opportunity to try and provide health care creates an opportunity for people to go into, I think, some of these smaller areas and set up a practice.
Well, we've seen a lot of things there. And when you look at, part of it is administrative. That's been difficult on folks. But, I think a bigger part of this is when you've moved the payment to largely a consumer-based responsibility, the bad debt collection or the collection of the consumer portion piece of those payments to providers is averaging about 5%. And so it's just made it incredibly difficult to stay in business by yourself. However, we see the same thing. We launched actually in rural communities first when we first started the company because we knew that was where the greatest need was because of the plan designs and the lack of coverage. But, what we're really seeing is, if you can take healthcare in its simplest form and you get away from, in Washington we call reform introducing more regulation, and regulation in different ways or undoing regulations, where in reality we're showing that healthcare is not different than any other product. We've now processed over 100,000 patients, and we've seen how they buy and purchase. And what we know is that if you can connect a provider who's the seller of a service directly to the buyer who's the patient of the service and remove everyone in the middle, they will transact, and the free market governs that just fine. Everyone can make – the provider can make more money. The patient can have much better savings. And one of the most unique factors we've seen is we survey our patients after purchasing. And our patient satisfaction score, known as the Net Promoter Score in e-commerce, is 91. And to give you a comparison of what that means in satisfaction, Apple has always been a benchmark standard in the tech industry. Theirs is in the high 40s. They're in that promoter score. Most of the healthcare organizations in the country, the hospitals and so forth, are somewhere in the teens to 20s. And the insurance companies, some of them are in single digits or even negative. And so what it's showing is the patient really likes to consume healthcare more this way than under the way they have in the past. And so there's really no reason why the government and other programs, we just can't make this simple change. I mean, I say this all the time at conferences that healthcare, we've been led to believe it's so complicated, you just can't change things, you got to have, 10,000 pages of regulation. But at the end of the day, it's really not that simple. I don't believe that it's this complex at all. We've seen that it's not. And, we don't believe that managing and aggregating healthcare and allowing patients to have purchasing and see quality information about providers and so forth is any different than when someone like American Airlines is managing thousands of planes in the air, ticket prices changing by the minute, cancellations, repurchases, fuel management. It's no different than any other major industry. And so we really just need to embrace that idea that we can solve this problem with the technologies we have in 2017, and we don't need 10,000 pages of regulations and 8 people in the middle of every transaction.
What do you think has been the biggest obstacle for the expansion of your business?
Well, in the beginning, the biggest issue was we had a lot of providers. It was completely a new concept, and many of them were fearful about regulation. Early on we had objections of, well, you just can't do this. You can't charge people a certain rate. I have insurance contracts. And that really wasn't the case, and, we had to go in and show them the regulatory statutes that allowed those providers to operate that way. But they were, very apprehensive, you know, from, you know, ensuring that they weren't going to do something that was wrong or they could get penalized for under a previous structure. And, you know, today, the company's growing really, is growing very quickly. I mean, we've had over 100% growth 3 years in a row. So I think it's growing quickly. I think the biggest thing now is just, we're still a small company. You know, we're 45 employees. As I mentioned, we're in 33 states or 180 markets, but, you know, we're only touching the customers that are in those markets, and, you know, we're still getting a lot of referral, word of mouth, we're still marketing. So we just need to access more people, because more people who are exposed and find out that, you know, hey, I can pay $450 for an MRI versus $2,700, they're, you know, they like that service once it's been exposed, once they've been exposed to it.
Dan, before we proceed further, we have to stop a moment with Paul Ketchell and hear a word from our sponsors.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
We're back here with Paul Ketchell. He's founder of MD Save, and his company is providing a very valuable healthcare service. We're back to Dan.
Thank you, Don. Paul, I just needed to follow-up question just to clarify. In your discussion with Don, you were talking about certain services like maternity and other things. So did I understand it correct that you don't cover everything? Help me understand where you're headed.
No, so, you know, we're not an insurance company, but we are much like, as I said, we're more like an Amazon or Expedia where you can go on and look for a service based on your area. You know, we'll show providers and the exact cost of that service, and it's fully bundled and you can access it. But today we have about 8,000 bundled healthcare procedures and services that are available across the country. And I would say we cover, you know, 90% of everything that you would see is typical, you know. So, yes, we do cover, for example, birth, you know, or in there, you know, everything from the $5 lab test up to, you know, inpatient, you know, orthopedic or cardiac procedures are covered. But, you know, the medical world is still quite large, so there's some things that are unique out there that we don't have offered yet. But one thing that we do every day is we'll have a patient who's at one of our hospitals or one of our provider offices who needs a service that's not listed, the provider will call, and we can typically get that bundled and add it to the site in about 30 or 40 minutes. And once we've built it one time, it goes live, and we can push that out to other providers who might want to subscribe and use that particular, offer that particular service to patients also.
Paul, just to make sure that the audience understands what they're buying, this is not an insurance company. So this is you're looking at the deductibles that the out of pocket that the patient has to pay, and you're using those patient dollars to fund the procedures, but you're shopping for them and giving them the best possible price based on their location.
Yeah, that's right. So the patient, you can be in, you can have insurance, or you can be uninsured, either way. But if you have an out-of-pocket expense, either because you're under the deductible, you don't have coverage, or this particular procedure you needed, your insurance company is refusing to pay for one reason or another, you can simply log on to the site. You don't have to pay to join the site. You don't have to have an account. You can just go on and put in that procedure and see what's available in your area and see the fully bundled price of that up front. You know, and by bundled price, I mean soup to nuts. It's from, you know, your initial consultation and visits all the way through maybe your physical therapy and the surgery, the anesthesia, the imaging, everything in between. So it's one true price that you can purchase. And you can use it or not. Like as I mentioned, you don't have to, you know, there's no fee to join or subscribe to it as a patient. You're just able to go on and see those purchase options.
I know average is a hard thing to figure out, but But in the time that you've been in the business and where you are today, what do you think is the average savings to the average household, if there are average of either ones?
Yeah, it depends on which state you're in, you know, in the market. But typically it ranges somewhere between 40 to 60% of what your cost would be if you had used, if you were insured and you had a contracted adjustable rate under your deductible, you know, essentially the insurance discount rate, about 40 to 60% off of that rate per procedure. And if you're uninsured, the savings may be 70 to 90% over what you would be paying on that out-of-pocket rate.
Wow. Don?
Paul, how do you make your money?
So we make our money really in two ways. One, we have a subscription fee that's charged to the hospital and their providers to access the service and list that. So we're paid a software SaaS license. And then we also have a small transaction fee that's built into each of those bundled procedures and services that allow us to maintain the site and market to consumers in those markets.
And the hospital and the doctors, in effect, update your website?
Well, we have a team that does that, but yeah, so when we go in with the providers, we onboard, you know, for example, a hospital and all their providers that are owned and affiliated with that hospital. We get the services up and running and linking, but if we do give the providers, this is a really different thing that we've done that they've not had the power of in the past, is providers can log into their provider account on the site, and they can add or remove procedures, but they can also change prices up and down on those procedures if they want to be more competitive in a market. And so it allows really free market forces to enter healthcare where they've, you know, typically been prohibited in the past.
The information we have on your service says that almost 60% of your customers are female, making the buying decisions for the entire family, and over half of your clients are 25 to 44. So you got some millennials in there. Were you surprised at the young age of your buyers?
Well, I mean, no, not really, because if you look at the millennials, many of them have chosen to not have coverage, or many of them have chosen, you know, the lowest premium plans with the highest deductible. And you know, I would say, you know, our average age customer is closer to 42, you know, than the millennial, just because of the fact that millennials are relatively healthy as a population and don't consume nearly as much healthcare as the rest of us. But,
right. But
you know, they are also very tech savvy, and millennials want – they want to see transparency when they're making a purchase, and they want on-demand service. And, you know, they also want to have, you know, I think millennials as a consumer block are even more apprehensive to go through the traditional healthcare insurance waiting room / channel, which is, you know, when you're used to ordering something on Amazon.com and it being at your house in 1 hour, you know. So I think that's, you know, it's not surprising to me that we have, you know, a significant block there.
You, in your background of the company, you talk about that the majority of the people purchases wouldn't have been able to afford their procedures without the use of your business. And let me ask you this question. Recently, several different sources have been talking about household income and the ability to handle an emergency expense of anywhere from $450 to $1,000. If Americans are going to use your service are going to pay out of their own pocket, do a lot of people have the ability to make that payment?
Well, you know, we still have a portion that do not have it. You know, the difference would be, you know, I think when you look at household savings and an unexpected medical expense, you know, I would say $450 is on your low end, because usually if you have something serious, at a bare minimum, you're going to require advanced imaging diagnostics or a significant lab workup. And, you know, on an insured rate and contracted adjustable, that's usually going to run you somewhere over $2,000, you know, $1,500 to $3,500, somewhere in that range. And, you know, we're getting that cost down to, say, $400 to $600 range. But that's still a burden to a lot of people. And one of the things on our site we do is we do have a partner, Parasol Financing, and we allow them, they can do some financing for patients, you know, up front if they can qualify. And they try to go down to a lower credit score in different areas. But it's a major problem. I mean, we still have a group of patients who each month, you know, come to us to access care. They couldn't have qualified for financing, and they couldn't afford even our rates. And, you know, some of them we can save that. They can call our support line, and we'll save their purchase profile and what they were trying to build. And a lot of times they'll come back to us, and, you know, one of the things we created to help mitigate that is we have, you know, like the ability to take multiple credit cards on the transaction or take part check, part credit card, because sometimes people will go to, like, family members or friends, and they'll split up a payment, you know, in portions of it. But it's still a major challenge for a lot of people in America, and, you know, I think, you know, we try our best to help those folks, but I think, you know, with us, we're a better option, but, we're, you know, there's still a lot of people we're not solving that problem for, and I think that, you know, unfortunately, I think that problem is getting worse in the country, and it's not getting better.
You might be able to bring the price down, but that doesn't mean that the even bringing the price down that people can afford it or put the money up to pay for the procedure.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, and you know, we do our best there, but it's tough. Yeah.
I hate to break this up, Paul. It's been a fascinating conversation. Your website again, because we have to move on to our next guest. But your website and how people could reach you. And anything else you want to say?
No, just, you know, I would just encourage, you know, listeners, if you, next time you have an out-of-pocket expense, it doesn't hurt you to come on to mdsave.com and at least take a look and see what's there, and you might have a better option. And, you know, if not, you know, there's, as I mentioned, there's no, you don't have to join or create an account or anything to see if there's a better option. And, you know, there's not, it never hurts in healthcare. I tell this to people all the time, to shop around and take a look, because you can save a lot of money in an average market. The fluctuation in a local market is about 330% in the cost. So shop around. It'll be to your benefit.
Thank you so much, Paul, for being with us today. It's been a pleasure. And we hope to have you on the program again later in the year when we really get into the time, into the question of choosing your health care program, either as an employer or as an employee. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Well, now, Dan, it's time for a commercial from one of our sponsors.
Life. It's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full. Full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Dan, our next guest is right up your alley. He's Mark Lipton. He's a professor, a veteran progressive C-suite advisor, and the author of a new book coming out next week, Mean Men, The Perversion of America's Self-Made Man. Mark, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you guys. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your book, about if you have a website for it, and then I'm just going to turn it over to Dan, because we booked you especially for Dan.
Okay, thanks. So,
I don't know if that's good or bad.
I'm delighted and honored to be on your show.
Go right ahead.
The Mean Men started when I had done a book on helping entrepreneurs all the way up to Fortune 500 CEOs figure out how to put together a vision for their organizations. And then I started doing a lot of work back in the late 90s in what was becoming a a new renaissance of entrepreneurship in New York City with the whole dot-com run-up. And I was consulting to young CEOs. These were young guys, barely out of college, a lot of angel money sloshing around, a lot of venture capital money for the first time, being passed out to people with very little experience. And I was brought in to coach these young CEOs. And initially it was great. I was intrigued by them. I was really kind of fell under the spell of the vision of many of them. But then I just started seeing something that was very disturbing. There was a dark side to many of these guys that I just couldn't explain to myself. And I promised myself, you know, when I get out from under a bunch of those gigs, you know, and put my management professor hat back on, I've been a management professor for 38 years. This was the next area I was going to research, and that's what I did. So starting in 2008, I started a pretty large research project and actually took some time off and was a scholar in residence at a noted psychiatric center in the U.S. to really understand what is the psychopathology that was going on with these young guys. And that ultimately led to Mean Men, the book, and to try to understand the psyche of the entrepreneur a little more clearly.
And what did you learn?
Well, what did you learn? What I learned, the first thing I learned was what I think would be interesting to your audience is we'd like to believe that the decades of research and understanding the personality profile of entrepreneurs is pretty solid and the data is irrefutable. The first thing I found, which was kind of disheartening, was that much of the research looking at personality of entrepreneurs was really bad research. And so it took a little more time for me to sift out the wheat from the chaff, but I was able to through a number of statistical techniques, able to sort through, you know, like, what is the good data here that we can really put our faith in and understand what those personality characteristics are. So I ended up actually with what I call 10 plus T. There, what I found is that virtually all entrepreneurs have a slightly higher degree of personality particular personality characteristics over the general population. That's good. That's healthy. And along with these 10 characteristics, the T, as you may guess, the T stands for testosterone. So there was a fascinating study done quite recently that showed that entrepreneurs have a higher testosterone coursing through their body than the general population. And I don't think that's surprising at all. But here was the moment of intrigue and surprise and concern was when, as I studied those 10 characteristics, I realized that if you took three or four of them and really dialed them up, you know, more than an average entrepreneur would have, but you dial them up even more, it actually set the stage for a fairly serious psychiatric disorder. And there are entrepreneurs in the public sphere who I believe have this disorder. They're high functioning, but they are, in a word, mean. They control, they exploit, they can ruin people's lives. They're quite abusive. And while mean may work in the short run, the data is showing us that in the long run, it is no recipe for success. And talent flees. Investors usually wake up and realize this is not a guy we want to put our money into, and other collateral damage that we see. Nonetheless, in our culture, you know, we are a very entrepreneurial driven culture, which is good. And we've normalized this. We've normalized meanness as part of what we think is important for entrepreneurs. And just, you know, to give a couple very public examples, you know, Steve Jobs was clearly one of these guys. And one would say, well, look at what he accomplished. Look at what he created. And I agree. It's pretty amazing. What we don't know is what could he have accomplished? Sadly, you know, we lost him. But what could he have accomplished if he did not have this really mean streak to him? You know, let's be honest. He failed the first time at Apple. He failed at his second startup Next. And then he came back to Apple. And in part because of the characteristics of people who decided to stay with him when he returned to Apple and weather through some of his pretty destructive, disarming behaviors, Apple has succeeded. On the other hand, you know, in the news recently, we've got the former CEO of Uber, and he meets my criteria as well. Uber is in a mess. Good luck to their new CEO, but Kalanick really created an organization that certainly got big fast, but has some very serious organizational, structural, cultural problems. And I wish the new CEO luck in fixing all those things before the IPO happens.
Dan, you got a question in there?
One or two. If I might just comment on the Uber situation. I too wish the new CEO luck, but I think when you look at what has happened to the customers of that company, where drivers have raped women, where drivers have broken into homes, I'm not sure that it's possible for this company to survive longer term. It's an interesting concept, but when the trust between the company and the customer has been so disrupted based on the activities of the employees, it's a tough one. And you don't have to comment. I just was making that as an observation.
I have to comment on that.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. If I could just add to that, Dan, I completely agree with you. And I have a very strong belief that the behavior of the brand becomes the brand. So those egregious behaviors that you mentioned that have been reported and verified, and then some, that becomes the brand. And you know, you folks know as well, if not better than I, what is involved in turning a brand perception like that around.
It is
really tough, if not impossible.
Right.
You
know? So let me challenge you on a couple of issues. Factually, because there are physically more women than there are men. Did you not look at the behavior of female entrepreneurs?
I did somewhat. I made a decision early on that I was going to focus this on men. And
mm-hmm.
One reason was because I wanted my case to be bulletproof. Whatever it found, I wanted it to be bulletproof
okay.
in terms of the research. And while women have been streaming into the entrepreneurial sphere, if we look back on the academic research coming out of business schools in the last 30 years, it is overwhelmingly male-dominated in terms of their subjects. So
mm-hmm.
it would be very hard for me to really, you know, broaden any generalizations about gender when the data wasn't there. So I'm with you. I think, you know, that may be another book. I'm not sure if I want to do the book Mean Women, but I do have a chapter on women.
Okay.
But again, I limited it to men because that's where the hard data is.
Yeah. And I can see where certain segments of our country would enjoy the quote mean men referenced because of their bias against men. But Mean Women might be much more controversial and you get a lot more heat. But I will tell you that I have seen a lot of research about millennial women and their demeanor in the workplace. And they from what I've seen, I haven't seen a research study like yours, but I've just seen representations of comments of people that where there were certain, historically, there are certain language usages and phrases and phraseology, profanity, whatever you want to say, that have been associated with men. The millennial women in the workforce swear as well as the men do, and so that they are as aggressive now as the men are aggressive. And I'm wondering if that next generation of female entrepreneurs may wind up with some of the traits that you found in your male entrepreneurs.
They may. It's a good point. It's a point I've been thinking about. And while the number of women, moving into managerial positions in larger organizations and starting businesses is certainly growing, particularly exponentially from where it used to be. We still have a double standard, and we still cut guys much more slack around aggressiveness, around need for control, around the predisposition to take big risks. A lot of these entrepreneurial characteristics. We say, either boys will be boys or we just don't process this kind of behavior in men the way we would do in young men. Let's just keep the age same in young men as we would with young women. So when we see a woman whose colorful language can stack right up to the, the most, colorful of men. Even if we hold age constant, I think, a young guy listening to that is going to probably fall under the spell of, well, wait a minute, that doesn't feel right coming from this woman over here.
Well,
so I think we still have this ubiquitous, pervasive.
Dan, can I interrupt? Because we need to put a commercial in here.
Okay, go.
Before you hear this or this or even this, before you turn a key, step on the gas and let it rip, before you get up and out and on the road, you have to be fueled by something. Make sure that something is Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
We're here with Mark Lipton. He's a professor who's produced a fascinating new book.
Mean Men.
Mean Men. The Preparation of America's Self-Made Men. A man. It's a fascinating book. Well, at least I'm finding it. So, what about you, Dan?
I am. I wanted to ask the professor a qualifying question, and I hope it's not lost in the subtlety of the question. Did you go out to do research on entrepreneurs or only male entrepreneurs?
Good question. It was only entrepreneurs. And at the beginning, I had no strong opinion whether it's going to be men and women or just men. What made the decision about men was that, with the valid studies that existed out there, they were overwhelmingly dominated by male subjects. So that channeled me to look at men. But your question begs a slightly wider response, that what I realized, and this was pretty much after the baseline research was done, I sat back and I looked at these characteristics and I thought, you know, there are entrepreneurs that start up businesses, but there are entrepreneurs in other fields right now, because the economics are changing and industries are changing that now are far more entrepreneurial fueled and require the entrepreneurial personality. So, for example, in sports, and I feature you know, real live names and people in each of these categories. But in sports, you know, we've got a free agency industry now, where before, in the old days, you were basically owned by a sports team. If you were a player, if you were a coach, you were basically owned by that team for your career. And now, you know, you got relatively short-term contracts, and you're an entrepreneur. You go out and find the best deal and the best fit for you. Same thing with entertainment. You know, in the old days, the studios owned you as an actor. They owned you as a director, and that doesn't exist anymore. You're a free agent out there. Politics, and it hit me one morning a couple of years ago, and kind of slapped my forehead and said, wow, you know, politics is an entrepreneurial business. And I went down my profile and realized that not only were successful politicians pretty strong in these 10 characteristics, but the ones who were really bothering me, not annoying me when I listened to them, but frankly were really upsetting me, started to fit the profile of the mean man. And I'll go one step further. I then realized that there are facets of religion and religious leaders who are entrepreneurs, and some of them are mean men too.
Yeah. So what, following that very interesting comment that you made there, if in fact these are traits of entrepreneurs, intuitively, all I'm asking you is intuitively, do you believe that if these are the 10 common traits of entrepreneurs, do you believe that if you were to do a research study on women entrepreneurs, you'd find some of the same traits?
Yes. Yeah, I don't have to think too much about that. I really do. Now, again, we're talking at a healthy dose. We're not talking, you know, any kind of psychological pathology here. We're talking, you know, healthy, successful entrepreneurs. I do believe that it will carry over, you know, as the data, you know, is getting collected more and more about women who go into entrepreneurship. Yeah, I think we'll find the exact same characteristics.
I mean, it would seem logically to me, Professor, that if you're a young man or a young woman who wants to be an entrepreneur, you're going to try and find somebody or some bodies as role models, and so that those 10 traits, mean or not, are going to be transferred to the next generation, because we're looking for models to give us in a direction of success and how they got there.
Yeah, that's a very insightful comment, because the modeling is very important. I think part of what's contributed to this mean men phenomenon is that very characteristic of modeling is disappearing, because, you know, it wasn't that long ago before, you know, we had this free agent nation that you had to pay your dues in a big corporation first, or mm-hmm. Some big organization. And, you know, if your behavior was a bit off, you know, you got performance reviews, you got feedback, your rough edges were sanded down a bit, or you were thrown out. But there was a modeling process that went on as you paid your dues, even for a decade before you struck out on your own. That is not necessary anymore. You know, you could not just go to college and then get funding. You could quit college and get funding if you've got a compelling vision. And, you know, we're able to wrangle a few angel investors to bootstrap you up. So the modeling, you know, I love your comment because the model, there's almost an absence of modeling. Who do you model yourself after?
Right.
So you go, do you look in the news? Do you model yourself after Travis Kalanick? Or do you model yourself after somebody like Mark Benioff at Salesforce, who has built a phenomenal company and is probably, you know, one of the most extraordinary leaders we have right now, who came out of the startup world.
Yeah.
But modeling, it's a very powerful thought.
Yeah. Tom, how much time do we have?
We got about 7 minutes, but
okay.
I'd like to jump into here and ask Mark to repeat the five most important of his 10 characteristics.
Most important. Most important for a successful entrepreneur, or most important that will lead an entrepreneur into becoming a mean man?
No difference because I'm listening. This is one of the most intellectual conversations we've had on this show, and I'm listening, and I'm trying. I've interviewed an awful lot of entrepreneurs over the years, and to me, what to me was the main characteristics were one the. Overcoming successive failures, two, understanding that they needed help and that the choosing the right people was an important characteristic, and then treating them correctly. But if I heard yours, your list, I don't know where they fit in. So that was my question.
Okay. Got it. So let me give you a sense of these. You know, this list is not saying this is what you need to be a successful entrepreneur. This is what we're finding that entrepreneurs have. And some of these characteristics they have to figure out how to compensate for. So, for example, the first one, which is very important, and I would say you got to have it, is what's called a high need for achievement. You know, you've got to be driven. And be able to set very high goals for yourself, not unachievable goals, but very challenging goals for yourself. And people with high need for achievement also desperately want feedback because they want to know, am I tracking to get my goals met? So high need for achievement is very important. We also find that some other characteristics, a relatively higher level of autonomy. So, you know, it's a go it alone, not feeling dependent on other people. Clearly, you know, that can get an entrepreneur into trouble because, you know, when we take a look at how many firms start up with partners, but the partnership fails after a year or two, usually it's that need for autonomy and need for control. That might get in the way. But at a healthy level, autonomy, need for control are important. We have found that impulsivity is an important personality characteristic. That may sound negative, but you've got to be able to make decisions quickly on your feet and find that balance of how to make the quick decision in the moment, and it's the right one, but not so impulsive that you're reckless. Predisposition to take risks, and that's probably a no-brainer to the two of you and your entire audience. You've got to have a tolerance for risk, but I think, you know, when you stretch that a little further, you can see how that's a liability as well. And another one, let me just mention one more, which is a pretty healthy level of self-confidence in yourself, because as you mentioned, there's a high probability of failure. You got to be able to feel good about yourself, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and try it again. The risk with the self-confidence is we don't want it moving over to some high level of narcissism where you really lose track of who you are.
Dan, you get to ask the last question.
Okay. Professor, I have a dichotomy for you.
Mm.
You have produced this research about high levels of testosterone, and yet what we see all the time on radio and television is the fact that the male testosterone level in the United States is declining, and men are becoming less men because of low T. And so how does that fit in? Does it mean that your students, your subject matter, your entrepreneurs are an even finite group of people, and the rest of the male of the species is becoming less male?
First, the clarification. The research on testosterone levels in entrepreneurs wasn't conducted by me. It was conducted done at Emory University by some other folks. I'm not that familiar with the data point you mentioned, that there's a decreasing level of testosterone in men in the country. I'll definitely check it out. But it certainly has not come up in any of the work that I've done that's led up to this book. So I wish I could give you a cleaner answer. I'd rather say I'm not as if I was more familiar with the research that you're mentioning about men in general. I feel more comfortable responding to that.
Well, Dan, since we're going to cut that one from the show so we don't get all kinds of things, you get one more question.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that question. I mean, the professor gave us an honest answer. But I'm curious, is in your study, following what we were just talking about, in your study of entrepreneurs, what is their skill level at interpersonal relationships with wives?
Wow, that's really, yeah.
I did it again.
Oh, you really want to get the women involved in here, don't you?
No, that's what I found, and I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't even really thinking about it when I started diving into this project. But the entrepreneurs who have really healthy relationships with their wives, when you look at their personality profile, they basically have a very healthy level of all of these entrepreneurial traits. And as these entrepreneurial traits are really jacked up, they're much, much higher than would be normal for entrepreneurs, there's a strong correlation where they're in really lousy relationships. I mean, and in fact, they can be very abusive relationships. And I interviewed about a dozen wives of entrepreneurs with those higher levels of characteristics. There are horrifying stories.
Talking about physical
abuse. Keeping those, in some cases, it was certainly emotional abuse in many cases, and physical abuse in some.
Wow.
And with some of them, you know, the wives had a personality profile that kept them in the relationship. You know, they were weirdly, you know, symbiotic relationships, but the men had all the power and control, and the women couldn't leave. Ultimately, in those physically abusive relationships, they thankfully did. And I interviewed some of them as well as others who were emotionally abused. But again, at a healthy level, you know, these entrepreneurial personality profile traits, tempered, the relationships with wives are fine. And I would use that. You know, I frankly would say, you know, where there's a really healthy relationship between a male entrepreneur and his wife, my bet is you're going to find somebody who's a real leader in the firm that he's running. A real leader. People look up to him. They're motivated by him. They want to follow this guy.
rather than fear him.
Thank you so much, Professor.
So I don't butcher it, Professor. Your book, the name of your book again, and where people could get it?
The book is Mean Men. They can go to my website to learn more about it, marklipton.com. And it is releasing on September 5th, Tuesday, and it'll be available everywhere online, hardcover, paperback, ebook, and we're hoping for an audiobook to follow. But it'll be available everywhere online September 5th, Mean Men.
It's an exciting book, and I look forward to it.
And by the way,
myself.
For your something for your audience, if they go to my website, they can click on Guiding Growth, which is my last book, and I have no obligation. They can download a PDF of it for free. It's a book that's been used by a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of C-suite people in larger corporations to build out their vision. And so that's a free download for Guiding Growth.
I have that in my library because you may not remember, but I did interview you when that book appeared. So, and I've kept that book.
Ah, good for you. Great. Thank you. Thank you.
thank you so much. We've been talking with Mark Lipton. What a fascinating book. Wouldn't you agree, Dan?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you
for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Now a word from our sponsor.
Life. Well, it's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full. Full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Now it's time for Dan's Tip of the Day. You can put that in there whenever.
Dan here from recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Are you protecting yourself against lazy lawsuits? You may be asking, what is a lazy lawsuit? This is a lawsuit because you have not been paying attention to the details. It used to be that you could do business on a handshake, but unfortunately, not anymore. Handshakes don't have any details, so both parties have to remember the same things for the handshake to work. The problem enters in when memories fail, and it turns into he said and she said. Here is the recalculating small business tip of the day. Work with the client in developing a contract. That way your customer will be putting in writing what he expects you to do and when the job is to be completed. You will know what and when is expected of you. It may take a little extra time, but it will save you both time and money. I'm Dan Perkins from recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day.
You know, Dan, that's so accurate. I'm an expert witness in a case that is dealing exactly with that point in terms of a printed product. Mm. But I wanted to talk to you about our two guests today. I just thought we had two fascinating guests that mean so much. What do you think?
Well, I enjoyed the conversation. I not intentionally threw some curveballs to the for the professor, but he seemed to think that they were challenging, and that's important, you know. And And it's important for us to tell our audience that recalculating is growing. We're going to have some exciting guests in September, including the former head of Apple, John Sculley. We'll have a president of a dog and cat food company and the founder of a company with a mobile app for workers, a barber who's created a new shave cream, and the head of an innovative coffee company, a leader of a firm that makes it easier for small business to utilize social media, and many things more. So stay tuned, and if you missed something, go to recalculating.biz and listen to a past episode. Don?
Well, all we have time for now, Dan, is goodbye.
Goodbye and have a great...
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.